challenges do parliamentarians face in executing their fiscal scrutiny functions, including the review, approval, or rejection of their government's national revenues and expenditure plans? How does information asymmetry between the executive and the legislative branch influence their ability to effectively fulfill this responsibility? What institutions or practices can be adopted to facilitate this? In this Parlamerica's podcast, Kevin Page, founding president and CEO of the Institute for Fiscal Studies and Democracy at the University of Ottawa and former Parliamentary Budget Officer of Canada, addresses these questions to provide an overview of the parliamentary financial cycle and guide parliamentarians to identify common gaps and strategies to manage these challenges. This intervention was recorded during a workshop on strengthening accountability through fiscal transparency practices that took place in Port of Spain in Trinidad and Tobago on September 6, 2017, to analyze challenges and identify opportunities for improvement, with particular attention to the role of parliamentary budget offices and fostering public participation in fiscal policy.
Good morning, everybody. It's an honor to be here. Storm and all. It's always good to get out of Canada, though it's more fun to get out of Canada in the wintertime when it's snowing. But it's always great to come to the Caribbean. Again, just a few thank yous. Thank you to Trinidad and Tobago for making this possible, for bringing us all together. It's quite a really interesting group of which we're going to talk about, hopefully get everybody involved, of people that come at this issue of accountability and fiscal transparency from different perspectives. So it should be a very rich discussion, and I think that is my challenge. Thank you to Parlamericas as well for bringing us together. Thank you, Alicia and company, for making this happen, just to giving us that support that brings us together. And then again, really just thank you to the participants. You know, as the speaker said, not easy to come, you know, this time of year with the storm, but also just to, you know, to break away from your activities in your home countries and to be here. So thank you so much. The topic is strengthening accountability through fiscal transparency practices. It's an important topic. In some ways, it is it's timeless, and in some ways, it's also very timely. I mean, important, I think we know from, like, you know, just we know from our own practical experiences, we know from, like, reading history that, you know, countries succeed or fail often depending upon their ability to govern and to hold people account. And there's a great book that I get my students to read, Why Nations Fail, by a couple of professors from a U.S. institution, Aston McLuhan Robinson. And they say, you know, countries fail effectively for three reasons. And one is when power becomes very concentrated, and you get the sort of dictatorial kind of, you know, leadership. You don't get dispersion of power. You know, countries fail, number two, they say, when you don't have accountability, when we cannot hold elected representatives to account. And three, they say countries fail when we don't give the next generation opportunities, like, to grow and prosper. And so I think very powerful. So this spirit of this conference, strengthening accountability, fiscal transparency practices, I think we get rid of that core issue, that very important and almost timeless issue, like history teaches us. But also I think timely as well, because I think a lot of countries are struggling with this issue of accountability today. A lot of literature in recent years, that you can see these magazine titles, Democracy Under Stress. We watch CNN, you know, we see Democracy Under Stress in a very big country just north of here. But you feel it in different parts of the world, that somehow this world order is kind of pulling apart a little bit. We see it in the European Union as well, with, you know, talks of Brexit, and then, you know, what happened to that great integration project. So again, there's just this concern that that democracy is under threat, that institutions are under threat. And I think as well, since the financial crisis that the world experienced in 2008. There was a sense that now governments are dealing with a lot more debt, almost right across the world, and their ability to deal with that debt and to be held accountable as we dig ourselves out of that, you know, of that debt, is a very big issue. The agenda for me, I think, is really well put together. I think it just fits, I think, over the next couple of days in a very nice way. I think it like, you bring together the issues of citizens, which is going to be the key topic for tomorrow. How do we engage citizens? What are those toolkits that we are to, so that we have citizens and parliament working together to strengthen accountability and democracy. And then today, which is, as the senator said and the speaker said, it's mostly about institutions and information. And so, again, which are absolutely critical to kind of making sure that we have real accountability. So it's, I think it's a very strong agenda. Session one, which, you know, again, we're going to spend the next hour talking about it, really, like, what are those challenges throughout the financial cycle that kind of we all experience, maybe come out a little bit differently? What's the language that we could find that kind of brings us together so that we could, you know, yeah, we have this problem in Trinidad and Tobago. Yes, we have this problem in the Bahamas or in Jamaica or in Canada or in other places. And what are those common gaps that we all tend to experience? And what are those strategies as well that we, you know, that different countries are using? Are they working or not working? So it's around those two issues, like for the first session, thinking of, you know, we'll talk a little bit about the whole financial cycle. But when you look at it from your different perspectives, and we have parliamentarians here, we have, you know, bureaucrats like myself, I'm a former bureaucrat that support parliamentarians, we have civil society, you know, again, what are those common gaps? And how do you look at that? And how can we deal with them? And what are those, some of those strategies? So I think, like, in terms of this, you know, challenges throughout the parliamentary financial cycle, I think we want to set a very broad frame. So again, what are we talking about here, effectively? And again, back, we're talking about history, and we're talking about culture. So then, you know, I mean, the experience of the Canadians is not going to be the same experience in you know, of countries that are represented here today necessarily, because we share slightly different histories. Though institutionally, we may actually have very similar kind of makeups. And again, cultures. Some cultures are more apt. I have this great privilege of working in Jamaica right now, and you know, again, if you weren't a Canadian, you wouldn't know what it's like to stand outside the Jamaican Parliament and see parliamentarians of all different political stripes, you know, joking, talking, addressing them on different issues. You know, we don't have that same type of camaraderie, and actually in my country. So they, just the nature of culture around how we engage people in committees, outside of committees, in Parliament, outside of Parliament, can actually have an impact on you know, these challenges that we're trying to deal with. Some cultures are very transparent. Just naturally, they just naturally share information, and they want to have open debate, and, you know, and then others are much more secretive. Like, to be honest, in my experience in Canada, the whole, we, you know, the system that we've inherited from, I think from Great Britain largely is like, our, and the way we've developed it is very secretive, the budget practices. When I, and I will explain, I worked on, you know, for many years, and my career was really as a bureaucrat working in finance and treasury, something called the Privy Council Office. We work on budgets. There was only a very few people. Like, often you could, the people that are really involved in crafting the budgets were fit around a couple of tables like this for a country like Canada, where they're spending $300 billion a year. So very, and then the actual, you know, not involving a lot of parliamentary people. So again, the culture, again, it's, again, that you inherit. How do you, and like, what is the opportunity to change it? You know, so in terms of the broad frame, we're talking about governing and checks and balances. So again, I mean, we're talking about Parliament's ability to hold the government to account, but is the government's responsibility, the executive's responsibility to govern? And, you know, they, as elected representatives. So, and then, so what is the checks and balances? How does that play out? And particularly in the issue of financial control. At the end of the day, we're talking about systems and people. This is where, you know, people like where I work at a university, we get, eventually we break this down into, okay, what are those key systems? Like, you know, what are the rules around tabling a budget? What are the rules around setting up approval of authorities? What are the rules around passing legislation? And who are the key players involved in that? Again, ultimately, as I said, what's at stake is the country. So, you know, I think for me, again, my background as a bureaucrat for almost three decades working in these central agencies in a financial capacity. The last job I had as a bureaucrat was basically supporting the Prime Minister as something, an assistant secretary in Canada, kind of a chief economist position in an institution that supports him. And so, you know, you get this this perspective that, like, the power is really rested in, you know, in our leaders, in the governing party. And then, again, then becoming a parliamentary budget officer And then, you know, reading the traditions of legislation, I think we realize in a very different way. And under that Westminster system of responsible government, the power of the purse actually doesn't rest with the prime minister or the president of the country. It actually rests with parliament. It rests with individual MPs. You know, so the power of the purse, like no money gets spent, no taxes are raised unless individual MPs, members of parliament, senators actually approve those financial bills. So again, when we're really, what are we really talking about is like who owns that power of the purse? What do we want that power of the purse to be like? And the information and systems that support it. So the financial cycle, this session talks about the full financial cycle. And I think I've kind of had a chance to experience it both supporting the executive and then supporting parliament. And so like for me, and the way we sort of tend to, we tend to think about it is it really it starts almost at election time. When we see positions being put forth by parties, they want to make major changes. Big spending on infrastructure, could be spending on the military, changes to social programs, environmental programs, etc. That financial cycle effectively starts with the setting of those priorities. It could also start with the first speech from the throne or a State of a Union address. Like, what are the priorities of the government for that next session? How much information is going on, beneath, those considerations, on those considerations? Then it tends to move very quickly into the budget, the fiscal plan of the country. How is, what is those revenues and spending lines? How will those new policies and programs, how will they be funded for? So the presentation of a fiscal plan or budget. So the second key step after that speech from the throne or those electoral priorities becomes the budget. And that budget really fundamentally is the fiscal plan of the country. So the executive is effectively saying, I need these revenue authorities, I need these spending authorities to govern this year and potentially for the next 4 years. And then thirdly, it's legislation. The government wants to make changes. It wants to change tax laws. It wants approvals of existing spending authorities or new spending authorities. So there's the scrutiny process around the provision of those supplies of those authorities or changes to, to income tax acts or sales tax acts. And then finally, we tend to think of the financial cycle as public accounts. Okay, now we've spent the money. How did we do? What are those fiscal outturns? What have we achieved? So that cycle starts effectively from the setting of priorities around the budget to the fiscal plan, where we put some financial numbers around that budget in the context of a plan, to the passage of legislation on spending and revenues, and I think to the public accounts, which are audited by the audit office. How did we spend the money and the things that we spend we do? How did we do in terms of performance? Okay, so now really getting into the conversation where you can all participate in. So what are those challenges? What are those common gaps? And what are those sort of common strategies that and how do you relate to those? I will put up three in each one of these areas in terms of challenges, common gaps, and strategies that I see in from my work, both as a Canadian, but also like helping colleagues out in Jamaica. I sit on an advisory panel for the Slovak Republic. I was asked to review the UK Treasury Budget Office. I've done some work in South Africa. So when you look at it, more often than not, it feels more similar than different. But it is different, but at a certain level, it's very similar. It's similar. So the challenge is respect to the financial cycle. My own sense, there's three challenges. Number one, from the point of view of giving Parliament what it needs to hold the government to account in terms of financial control, number one is capacity, or I would even say competency. Like, again, as somebody that worked, on supporting the executive as a bureaucrat for decades, then going to work to support Parliament. Our very first report, as an example, in Canada was costing a war in Afghanistan. And I would know, as a bureaucrat, the Prime Minister would get briefed on this is how many troops we have in Afghanistan, or this is the amount of capital we have in Afghanistan. This is the soldier count that we have that has been disabled or unfortunately passed away. This is the aid that we're providing in that area. I know that the Prime Minister would get briefed, but I also know that there's no way that Parliament ever got briefed that way. So, and they never got briefed that way partly because they didn't have the capacity. They didn't have just the people in chairs to actually do that type of work. And so, again, we have a gap that is enormous. I know as I saw somebody as a Canadian, I would go to these, you know, first as a bureaucrat supporting a finance minister, he would go to a finance committee and say, here's our projections for the next 5 years. Here's where we think the economy is going to be. Here's where we think the budgetary balance will be. But Parliament never really had a team of people to support behind them saying, you know what, those projections look a little bit optimistic or pessimistic. You know, that, you know, there's transparency gaps in those numbers on the spending and revenue proposals. Or this proposal is not fiscally sustainable. They, you know, they did not have that capacity. I know as a bureaucrat who provided briefing to the finance minister and the prime minister and finance minister of Canada were very well supported. That information was never, detailed information was never shared with Parliament. So there is a fundamental gap that, you know, just in terms of, it's just not a level playing field. It's, you know, it's analytical and it's also informational. Then I think another kind of common challenge is just politics. So you have basically, we set up basically Parliament to hold the executive to account. And we have political parties and we want them to be partisan. But, you know, once you put the people in power, we all know what the tendencies are like. You know, when it comes down to provision of information or debate, you get one side of the picture. You do not always get all sides. It becomes very partisan. So politics actually is a big part of the challenge. How do you wade through the politics? How do you be a bureaucrat? And we have some bureaucrats like myself here. How do you fit in that very political debate? You know, where the Prime Minister of the day, again, and when I was the Parliamentary Budget Officer, said, I want to be tough on crime. You know, we're going to lengthen sentences, we're going to keep people in prison longer, and he would say there's going to be no cost to it. It's going to be safer because there'll be less crime on the streets, but there'll be no cost to putting more people in prison. That is a true story. That was a file that I had to work on. I said, well, actually, it's very expensive to put people in prison, I would say to the Prime Minister. And here's the cost. And if you change the laws in certain ways, if you get rid of remand sentences, you reduce conditional sentencing, you're going to have way more, thousands of more people in prison. And here's the cost of a person in a prison. This level of cell, you know, more higher level security cell, et cetera. So again, politics was kind of, since they were, rightfully so for the Prime Minister of the country, I want to be tough on crime. But if the bureaucrat is sitting there saying, well, wait, there's a Treasury cost to this. How do I get this into the debate? How do I work with our political leaders to put this in debate so it can be balanced out the debate? The third challenge is just systems. You know, we need systems of people that we can, by that I mean like we can work, like bureaucrats can work with, including both public servants and bureaucrats supporting Parliament and opposition MPs working with government backbenchers and in the executive to actually support, you know, accountability. And, you know, I think somebody that's kind of looked at the system for a long period of time, we have not set up, you know, our accountability systems in such a way that the power of the purse rests with the individual MP. I've not really seen that country yet. You know, we've designed these systems, including in Canada, we've tweaked them over time, so the power actually sits with the governing party. And it doesn't change what the political stripe of the party is. You know, parties come and go. So again, how do you rejuvenate those systems so that you are strengthening that power of the purse, that individual role of the MP, that you actually, there's value in that scrutiny. Okay, so those are three challenges. Capacity, politics, and systems. I'm going to have three gaps. Again, I'm going to open this up for conversation. So I want to hear your takes on it. Number one common gap is information. Like, you do not really, you know, if you're a member of a parliament at a standing committee of finance or estimates or in a department and you don't have the information to do your job with respect to holding a government to account, you don't even get to first base. You don't even get the bat in the cricket game. You're not even a player, really, if you don't have that information. You could scrounge for information, but we are not setting you up to look good. It is very empowering to give MPs information. That's one thing I saw for 5 years as being a parliamentary budget officer. We give the same information to individual MPs, government backbenchers, and opposition parties. They are empowered. They can debate at a much different level. So, for example, our very first project, Costing the War, all of a sudden we could have a debate in 2008 about Like, are we setting aside enough money for our veterans if they could become disabled? Or on that tough on crime legislation, aren't there other opportunities? Like, you know, putting more people in prison. What if we built better community centers for First Nations kids, et cetera? Wouldn't we get better if we had better drug programs? So there, you give them this information, even if it's financial in nature, they are empowered. And they don't get that information for different reasons, and you can help us, we can debate that. So the first common gap is information. Parliament's job is to hold the government to account. They don't get the same amount of information. Second common gap, I would say, that I've seen this across different countries. There's always the focus on the new programs. There's never the focus on the amount of money that we're existing spending. Like in Canada, again, we're a $2 trillion economy. Federal government spends about $300 billion. We have another level of government spends a similar amount. So about 15% of our economy. And always the focus is on the new programs. In the last budget, it was skills and innovation programs. In the previous budget, it was childcare programs and infrastructure programs. It's the new present underneath the tree. But what about the existing programs? And we read about the problems of, you know, paying public servants, our past infrastructure programs where we're running into problem, our military procurement projects that are struggling. How are we doing on those? Like, how do you get to be that part of the debate? And how do we ensure that the budget in the fiscal plan reflects even the old? And I think related to that is that budgets tend to be very short-term in nature around the political cycle. We don't often think about future generations. We don't often see a lot of sustainability issues. What does this mean, this debt that we're piling on? In Canada, we're running deficits again after many years of running surpluses. Who's going to pay for this debt? What's the instability that's created by this debt if interest rates start to go up? I think the third biggest common gap is the willingness to change. Again, having been around, you know, public servant for more than three decades in Canada, seeing all governments come and go, and then see governments when they're in opposition saying, I want to change the system. You know, I want a new independent parliamentary budget office when they're in opposition. I want to strengthen, I'm going to bring about real system reform. And then they come in power, it's all like, okay, you know, I don't want to be, you know, perfection to be the enemy of the good. You know, we'll take some a little bit more time. I want to think about this. Even when the roadmaps are there to change the systems, like to, you know, make sure that we have better information, to make sure a sufficient time is set aside to do scrutiny. There's just like the willingness to change, to bring about it, that spark is often missing. And it happens from time to time, but it just seems to be rare. So three common gaps: information, that new versus old, number two, and number three, a willingness to change. And finally, just some common strategies. And we're going to talk a bit about these throughout the next 2 days. I mean, and read into the title of this session is transparency. Like, all across the world, you could kind of pull up on government websites, open government initiatives. So I think, like, there's a sense that we need to do that. We're very lucky to have Juan Pablo here from GIF, through the Global Initiative for Fiscal Transparency, has kind of led this initiative globally. I mean, fiscal transparency, like, actually, if you have fiscal transparency, you will have accountability. There is no accountability without transparency. So achieving that is really, really important. So I think the governments are putting their fingers on the right initiative, but how do we make that real? And again, that's why I'm really glad that, you know, we have Juan Pablo here to talk a bit about those principles and what various countries are doing to make that real. So open government initiatives can become very political easy. Easy bait. It's easy for governments to say we're opening up. Look how much more information we put on our website. But is that information that goes on those websites, which could be very important for citizens, is it going to strengthen accountability? More often than not, it doesn't. I find you almost circumvents accountability. You overwhelm people with information, but it's not the information that's really there. Why are we making this purchase? Why are we changing this program? Why are we changing this tax rate? It's not decision-making type of information analysis that changes accountability. But common strategies, number one, is definitely improve transparency. Number two, I would say in the world, it's institutional reform. You know, when people say, we've got to strengthen parliaments, let's build new institutions. Like, I'm part of it, and I think the reason why I'm here today is I was Canada's first parliamentary budget officer. I was part of a wave of building these new, shiny institutions. Independent officers of parliament, providing analysis, the level of playing field, break down some of those information asymmetries between parliamentarians and bureaucrats. But it's, again, we're adding something new to these existing institutions. And now we went from, I think before the financial crisis, there were only a few in the world, and now almost every country has, in the OECD has a parliamentary budget office or a fiscal council, something called an independent fiscal institution. There's probably the better part of 10 of them in Africa right now. And they're starting to show up in the Caribbean, and there's a lot of talk in Southeast Asia and Asia areas as well of building these institutions. All of which is good, but it's institutional reform. It is a common strategy to strengthen parliamentarians. The third one, I think, is actually the most difficult one, is actually to fix the system. You could have a great parliamentary budget office, but if the system is dysfunctional, if it's broken, I teach this at the University of Ottawa, we kind of go through all the accounting systems from the budget to the estimates to the public accounts, try to follow the money, look at who's meeting, showing up at these meetings, what information is provided at parliamentary meetings. That system is not working in Canada. It's hard to change that system. So actually, because it's rooted deep into the culture, we get used to doing these things. So again, three common strategies that are to deal with this issue of strengthening accountability for Parliament. One, transparency initiatives. Very important. Number two, institutional reform, which tends to be new institutions, independent fiscal institutions of one sort or another to help parliamentarians. And number three, just systemically getting at the core problem. Okay, I've talked a long time and I apologize. We have a room full of really amazing people that cut across political spheres, the public service sphere and civil society. So we have this topic about strengthening parliaments. We're thinking about the whole financial cycle to start off this conversation. And we know we have many of these challenges that I've said probably feel real to you. A lot of these common gaps are there. And some of the strategies. It would be terrific to hear from you, just a sense of your own experience so we get this conversation started.